Look, I'm all for it. Kids reading 900 page books, like 10 of them. I'm for it, but I just never, I never got on the Harry Potter train. I think maybe it missed me.
It's so weird because, like, I look at a book over 300 pages now and I'm like, oh God, I can't possibly do this. Possibly. But back then, you're right, it was 900. I was like, yes.
No, I've read sometimes them all I look twice. At Zach Lowe's article and I'm like, hey, Zach, you're doing this to me today? I don't know if I can get all the way down to the 10-minute mark, my friend.
So if Gojo needed to sort of spend his life writing articles with referring to Harry Potter the same way like Bill Simmons referred to 24 for like and years, would you be able to pull that off?
100%.
Everybody would get what you're saying.
100%. Yeah. My life, well, it's a lot better because my other like reference point is like Japanese anime. Like I dropped Dragon Ball Z mm-hmm. references and anything, and very few people get that. A lot more people get the Harry Potter mm-hmm. references. So
not enough though. Not enough people. My point.
Izzy, so last time I was on my first time I was on the show, me and Pablo inducted Gojo as an honorary Filipino. Maybe this is a theme. Yes,
Izzy Gutierrez. That's Gojo. That's Cassidy Hubberth. Her second time on the show, and this is debatable. But okay, so you're saying he was a what now?
An honorary
Filipino.
Yes, because we wanted it to be the most Filipino show ever. Do we now induct him as an honorary sideline reporter?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've got a picture on my phone of him doing the Dr. Pepper challenge. I believe that is like some of the best sideline reporting I've ever seen.
Well, guys, I did do high school football sideline reporting for ESPN 2 years ago down in Miami. So we're in there. I have a limited experience, but excited to be aboard.
So he's been a member of the family. So next time I talk to Pablo, I'll wonder why I haven't been made an honorary Filipino.
Well, because we haven't, all that. Three of us, done a show. It has to be just, he can't have the all only right. word on whether or not you're an honorary
true.
Filipino.
It's like an our powers combine. We are Filipino.
A blue Sharpie over there. I already introduced us. So if you want to go ahead and give us a topic, we can go ahead and take the first topic.
Very salty off the jump. All right, first,
I'm Filipino.
He was talking about 40 degrees in Miami. Let's get a little pep in that step.
I mean, you don't know our pain, Izzy, in the Northeast.
I will say, I've been out in Scottsdale for a week and a half, and it was 50 last night when I was walking to dinner, and I was like, oh, it's a chill. It's amazing how quickly I've gone soft.
Carry a light jacket everywhere you go.
Speaking of someone who has gone soft by the weather, what do you make of Tom Brady's cloudy NFL future?
Gone soft.
Brilliant. It was on his own podcast, right? The Let's Go podcast, where he started discussing the idea of playing on, and typical to this time of year for him, he brings up all the factors. And in this latest one, he brought up family a lot. And he says here, it pains her, meaning Giselle, his wife, to see me get hit out there. And she deserves what she needs from me as a husband, and my kids deserve what they need from me as a dad. He has been saying this pretty much every offseason since like 2016 and 17, so it shouldn't really force you to believe that this is the time for him to go. You just kind of look at the big picture, at least I do, and not try to get into his head, but look at the big picture and see him, you know, leave the Patriots, win a Super Bowl, recognize or remind himself, because last year might have felt a little easy, not gonna lie, right? Might have felt a little easy to win a Super Bowl. You change teams, you got this loaded defense, you don't lose a game after after your bye week. This year seemed really difficult. You had a lot of issues. You had the Antonio Brown situation, which I'm sure soured him some. I would think it would make sense if this were the time for him to go. But if you look at him actually playing football and what you think the Buccaneers can put around him if he ends up staying there, I think it's just like every other last 4 or 5 years. It's pretty much the same. He's going to debate whether or not he's going to be able to give his family enough time and whether he can still play at a high level. And I think the latter part, the high level part, is already answered. Yeah, he still can do that even next year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, that part, pretty obvious. Like, if it weren't for Aaron Rodgers' existence this year, Tom Brady'd be the MVP of the league at 44 years old. I think this sounds like a guy publicly talking about it. To your point, Izzy, like, we've heard Giselle bat this around in public. We've heard about her imploring former teammates to try and talk to Tom and do all this. Like, he always put 45 out there as the number. It feels like next year's probably going to be the last year. Like, if I had to handicap it now, I feel pretty good about that. He can walk into it. eyes wide open on that one. He can also give his social media team and all the people that have been part of the documentary we've seen now already time to capture even more Last Dance-esque material to really celebrate this thing. Like, Tom doesn't do anything half-assed or unplanned, so it feels like that. And I think where his kids are age-wise, too, it's like 14, 12, and 9, something around that range. So right around the time where you're probably going to want to be home more for some of the high school things that start to happen, some of the, you know, the parenting things that pop up and all that. So it all feels like we're going to get to start to circle on the calendar. 2022 is the last one.
Cassidy, he can't finish his career without a farewell tour, right? Like, he's got to check all of the boxes, does he not?
I mean, look, it'd be nice for him to have a farewell tour, you know, like Kobe. But the thing is that football is a different sport. Like, guys out there on the field are going to be looking to say goodbye in different ways to Tom Brady. So it's not like, you know, guys are going to be taking it easy, because look at what he did this season. As far as, you know, the question, like, you know, what do you think of the cloudy future? I think it's wise. In talking to people who are close to Tom Brady, their thoughts on this is that he sounds different. This time, he sounds different. Even though we've heard these words before, he sounds different in how he's reflecting on where he is in his life. And as a wife who freaks out when my husband has eczema on his back, I wouldn't want to,
stuff
like,
can be itchy
this in the wintertime, and it just, I'm like, if we, you know, I'm like, go to the doctor, you know, get it checked out, who knows what it is. I wouldn't want to put myself in Giselle's shoes, and I don't care how much cheese you avoid, how much bread you don't consume. You're 45 years old, and you know, he took a few hits even in you know, the game on Saturday, and it's just like, how much more can he be a superhero? I know, like, we point, like, he's the GOAT. He could have been the MVP this year, maybe still can, depending on how the voters go. But it does sound like he's feeling different. Like, I had a chance to speak to Dirk Nowitzki a few weeks ago, who of course played 21 seasons with the Mavs. And he said something that I know is said a lot, but it just kind of hit different from him, where he basically said, like, he was asked when he was getting his jersey retired, like, what emotions he was feeling. He goes, well, I went through all those emotions when I left the game. And he said, athletes die twice, and I'm in my new life. And so I just, you know, I think Tom Brady, with the documentary and all the reflection he's been doing on his career, and winning a Super Bowl and sticking it to the Patriots and Bill Belichick last year, like, he doesn't have anything else to prove. So if he is having those moments with his wife and his kids this summer, I think he'll be at peace, because he's been going through all of the steps to kind of say goodbye to his first life.
That's so
two quick things. One, real quick, Gojo. Very few better feelings than being able to use your notes from an old sideline game. And that, Cassidy, it was excellent work right there. On a Tom Brady going back to Dirk Nowitzki. Whether you used it during that broadcast or not, using it here again is great. And speaking of Brady sounding differently and of things sounding differently, and you coming prepared, frankly, reporting? Like, speaking to people close to Tom Brady, please tell me more. Like, what else do you know? Like, I don't even know anybody that's close to Tom Brady.
I will say it's a game of telephone. I wouldn't say it was a direct line close to people, but people who have been following Tom Brady. It just sounds differently. It's not a report. It's like an observation.
Well, it's the most legitimate thing ever said on this little.
That is true. I'm going to say, this is the most sourced material anyone has ever had on this debatable show. But Cassie, what you brought up, like, is really interesting to consider, because what we're watching right now is kind of unprecedented. Because, like, to your point, I remember always talking to my dad about this. He's like, once someone starts talking about retirement, you're retiring yourself here pretty soon. Because especially in this sport, like, Cass, you mentioned how different people are going to try and say goodbye to Tom. Like, you can't half-ass this thing. Even a quarterback with all the rules protecting you, it's way too violent for you to go out there with some, like, half-thought of how in you are and all this. But then combine that, like, Tom is going through something that I don't know if we've seen. Like, we celebrate a lot of other modern athletes. Tom sat down for a 10-part documentary reflecting on everything. Like, that's the one thing athletes always say. Like, I'll reflect on that when my career is done. He did it for the last calendar year, where he went back and did all the reminiscing about that and felt the weight of his entire career in a way that not a lot of guys ever really have to grapple with. I can't imagine what a weird mental tug of war that is on the other side.
Yeah, Jordan had to take a break, and it was like 25 years later.
Yeah,
with Tom, though, I mean, it feels like there's only one way he's going to do this, right? It's not going to come back and say, maybe I'll win a Super Bowl, or maybe this team will be elite. It's got to be lined up like Super Friends Unite, like I want to go out one more time. And if I go out, you know, if I go out a failure, okay, fine. At least it will be one spectacular attempt where all of my focus is still there on the football. I'm not worried about all this other stuff. I'm not on a, you know, 500 or whatever, just one game above 500 type of team. It's got to be all in for him. And so in that, I guess you could sort of, he'd probably have to decide with the Bucks immediately based on what they're going to do in the offseason, right?
Well, and I think the Bucks also said that they're, you know, or at least there's, I believe, reports that they're going to explore the, you know, potential of free agent quarterbacks depending on what Tom decides here. And you've also got to your point, Izzy, like, you brought all the Super Friends back last year. You did the, hey, 22 right. of 22 starters return. They're going to likely lose Todd Bowles. You know, they could potentially lose Todd Bowles, who's doing head coaching interviews, their defensive coordinator. Byron Leftwich, their OC. I mean, we've already heard from Bruce Arians that if he ends up leaving, he's going to take back over offensive play calling. So you're not going to walk back into this thing whole. Chris Godwin, I think, is set to come up and is due for an extension, which sucks because he just got hurt. But there's going to be a whole bunch of those things that are going to make what we saw last year, like, that one more ride, you know, back for one more job type heist thing impossible.
Shout out Blaine
And if
Gabbert.
He forces them to do that, by the way, if he forces them to do that, they'll do it with no problem because you're talking about potentially, you know, mortgaging the future 5-6 years for what? 2 Super Bowls in 3 years? Totally worth it.
Wait, Cassidy, did you just shout out Blaine Gabbert?
Yes, because I'm over here reading these very insightful you know, posts here, and I just, you know, I was like, I didn't realize.
It's funny because I was shouting out Kyle Trask. I was saying, why are we showing this and thinking that those are two bad backups when Kyle Trask has proven he cannot play for years and then just emerge as a starter and be a Heisman candidate? So clearly, in the NFL, he can replace Tom.
How weird is this, by the way? So in the Army All-American games that we had, that, you know, Army and the Under Armour All-American games for football coming out of high school, the year that I was playing in that, sick brag, Mike, on the West team, the quarterbacks were my buddy Dane, who ended up coming to Notre Dame with us, Andrew Luck, and Blaine Gabbert, who, showing you how mean high school kids are back then, I think the nickname that I heard for Blaine Gabbert was Flabby Gabby because he wasn't necessarily the most put-together guy. And now he is the one that has outlasted all of those people. Like, I saw kids Andrew Luck before the national championship game, and Blaine Gabbert's still out here cashing these NFL checks, man. That dude made
it. One of the best
Whatever happened
jobs.
To your buddy Dane?
Right, my buddy Dane's a dad in Southern California to his son Holden. Him and his wife Hillary are out there. I think Dane works in like private wealth management.
Shout out Dane.
Dane and Holden.
Yeah.
Shout
Dane
out Dane
and Holden.
Yeah,
Holden names.
Good dude.
So look, just to put my little bow on this, I cried several times in high school when I had to wrap up my soccer season and my basketball season. I didn't really care much about my cross country season because it was just running. But like, Gojo, you actually played into college, you know, into, you know, professional. Like, where, like, how did you feel when the end was there for you?
College was interesting because, like, college is the one where, you know, I actually, you know, started 17 games, got to play in the title. I always tell, like, the story, like, we got our ass whooped so bad by Bama in that title, I got to do my, like, career mortality thing in the middle of the third quarter. Like, we're sitting out there, and this is a 3-touchdown game, and I legitimately on the sideline had to remember, like, to keep my composure because all those thoughts start flooding in, and I was like, I'm not going to let them catch me slipping on camera in this game. Like that. And so by the time I got done with the game, you know, you would kind of process a lot of those things. The NFL, like, I took a couple of shots there. I went to 3 training camps, and I do remember my last preseason game was at Lambeau Field. I was with the Saints. It was preseason 4. I got to go out there and do all that. Like, my family was there before the game, and it was one of those where I remember standing on the sidelines before, and I was like, all right, like, I know at this point, if I go out, like, I'll enjoy taking in this scene and the last of what it is and understand, like, I put everything I could into this. If this is how it ends, there's not a lot of better ways for it to end. Like, and then you have that battle with yourself for the next couple of years. I was talking about this with my mom actually the other day, because I have a couple of buddies who are, you know, playing into the end of their careers right now. And it's like, everyone's kind of got to have that conversation with themselves, short of Tom Brady, of, am I okay with the things that I didn't accomplish? Am I okay with the image of myself that I never got to? Because the vast majority of us are never going to get to paint the picture as nice as it was in our heads when we were coming up. And you've got to figure out how much of that you can live with before you walk away. Because once you cut that off, it is, like you said, Cassidy, you die and you got to figure out what that next version of life is.
It is crazy. You just said something. Yeah. Sorry. He said something, though. He said, short of Tom Brady. And I was trying to think of the list of guys and women under Tom Brady who would stack up as, like, there's nothing else you can do or prove. Like, there's nothing else you have to come to grips with that you didn't accomplish. Like, there's not many people on the same level as Tom Brady. That is...
Well, Sue Bird didn't have to come back this next year, but she's basically doing it just to open the arena again. But yeah, there's not too many. And like, that's the whole thing with Tom, is people were talking about, oh, if this is the last game, this and that. Like, the last year, the last game, none of that's going to matter for him. I mean, if it's the Super Bowl, great. But it doesn't really matter how it ends. He could get injured and it could end and be like, oh, well, he tried. Yeah, he could lose and it could end and it'd be like, oh, well, it's everybody else's fault, not his. If they lose in the playoffs, okay. Like, this past game, if this was his last game, I'd be shocked if it was. I would be shocked if it was his last game. But if it was his last game, doesn't hurt him. Probably actually adds to the legacy a little bit, because he almost came back from, you know, a 24-3 deficit in the second half. So it doesn't really matter. As much as I said, if he is going to come back, it's going to be, hey, the super friends come together, because that's going to be the only way he's going to get himself through a season, is with that kind of goal in mind. But however it ends, next year, the year after, really doesn't matter.
No.
It all does. Right, next topic.
Yeah. Awesome. All right, moving on.
I mean, we just nailed that. Go to commercial.
Yeah.
No?
Our next topic is definitely with someone whose career has not panned out exactly the way that he or we thought it would. And our question is, would the 76ers be crazy to hold on to Ben Simmons until the offseason?
Well, this has been floating around a little bit, and there was a Shams report on Yahoo saying that that is pretty much the way they're leaning, or at least considering. There's the notes for it, trying to trade him for James Harden in the offseason. Ben Simmons for James Harden. You know, Daryl Morey had him in Houston and supposedly had a chance to get him back into Philly. That didn't work out. Cassidy, I think the big risk here is the 76ers saying, okay, we're going to go ahead with the rest of this season without actually reaching our full potential. Is that okay with everybody? And the problem with that is it pretty much has to land you a superstar of James Harden's caliber in the offseason. Is that the right gamble?
You're risking so much. First of all, everything I've heard about the Sixers' stance on Ben Simmons is that they don't want to waste Joel's prime and just give Ben away. But they are currently wasting Joel's prime, MVP superhero type season for Joel right now, because the situation is casting a shadow over this team. Since Christmas, Embiid has averaged 34, 10, 56% shooting, 41% from three. He's had 50, 48, and 38 in his last three games. I feel like people aren't paying attention to what Joel is doing. How he didn't get player of the week, like, I know Jokic is doing insane stuff too, but how he didn't get player of the week, even though it's a, you know.
Travesty! Player of the week drama.
Travesty!
Yes, a travesty, a sham, and a mockery. It's a Travis sham mockery.
That's right. And then, look, and the Sixers are taking the risk that the Nets don't win the title, because that's what matters to Harden right now. You know, like, is Harden... As close as Harden is with Daryl Morey, someone he couldn't win a title with after 8+ seasons in Houston. I know there's some ties with Tad Brown, who's now with the Sixers, and Michael Rubin, you know, who owns 10% of the team. But is that a bigger self-serving bond than KD and Kyrie? And on top of that, KD is locked up for 5 years. Like, if that's not also payment for Harden, I don't know what is. And I know that Harden,
but what kind of bond is Kyrie? It's like Elmer's glue. Like, you can pull that off.
Here's
like
the
it's not he's not gonna
I
be
know
there.
There's frustration with Kyrie, and Harden's been the most vocal about Kyrie's situation, but when they play together, they are like two peas in a pod. Like, Harden is smiling ear to ear. Like you can actually see his teeth, which, you know, you don't see often. Like this is, they enjoy playing together. Harden knows that when he can play with Kyrie, it makes his job obviously a lot easier. Even if the situation with him not playing, say tonight at home against the Lakers and no KD and everything's going to be on his shoulders, is frustrating. But in the end, it's a long season and they can still win the title. And that's ultimately what Harden wants.
You mentioned that frustration with Kyrie. Oh, go ahead, Alabaster.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off, Gojo, but I do have a question, Cassie. Do you think either Ben Simmons or James Harden would be less happy if this trade happened? Because I kind of think they would both be happier if they flipped situations.
I just don't know why Harden would be happier on the Sixers over playing with, you know, Kevin Durant.
Oh, I'll give you a theory on that one.
Yeah, I mean, you got someone you can trust there a lot more than Kyrie. Because, like, Cassidy, I get the on-court relationship, but if it was that good, wouldn't he have signed an extension before the season?
But the sign and trade to join the Sixers, you're going to have to give away a lot of the young pieces as well. The Nets are not just going to accept a Simmons for Harden straight up trade.
Right. But you know, Cassidy, like if you're a GM and you're starting a team with James Harden, who's still in his prime, and Joel Embiid in his prime, you're fine. You're like, maybe I'll try to hang on to one of those pieces, like a Seth Curry, you know, to my life depended on it. But for the most part, I'm good. I know I'm probably going to have to give up a Maxi. But hey, I'm getting back James Harden. And there are teams that have regretted not doing that. Like, you know, there's all these reports about the Miami Heat not giving up Tyler Hero for James Harden a couple seasons ago. And you look back and think, man, the season Hero had versus the season Harden had, it would have been totally different. So you don't want to make those regretful decisions. And With James Harden, it's like he's just basically living the life of an NBA superstar but changing teams and recognize what's important to him. Yes, this title run means a lot to him, but unless it's a sure thing and you know, hey, I'm making a run to these finals, all this nonsense with with Kyrie and the vaccine and not playing in home games, I mean, that's just a distraction for James. And then when he is there, it's going to take the ball out of his hands more. So if he knows, hey, I'm the lead guard, no question about it, in Philly, I've got a guy on the post who complements my game better, and I've got a GM who understands my value and what I can do, then yeah, I'm happier there. I don't need all this nonsense. The part that was interesting about that quote, where he was reportedly upset with Kyrie and disappointed in Steve Nash, that is a huge question mark. Like, he's supposed to be, you know, the most understanding of the players' coaches, right? He's been there before, most recently. And so if you're disappointed in Steve, that just huge red flags everywhere for me with that relationship.
Cassie, I want to go back to what you brought up with the season that Embiid is having, because I was really confused when Daryl Morey went on local, like, Philly sports talk radio and did, like, his hour thing where he talked about them being willing to maybe accept a top 40 player now in return for Ben Simmons based on how well Embiid's playing. Like, to your point, like, what have we seen this year from Joel that we didn't see last season, in the postseason last year? All these things that would have been indicators that maybe maximizing that and getting someone in there for continuity for this entire season before the year started would have been the move. Like, this, quite honestly, the latest stuff we're hearing about Harden just sounds like a very public antidote for you trying to lower the value on Ben Simmons leading up to the trade deadline in a way that didn't make a ton of sense to me based on the reason you gave, which is, man, we got to max out what Joel's doing. Like, he's been doing this for the last year and a half now. What's different?
I mean, look, what's different is he doesn't have a defensive player of the year next to him now. And, you know, the East is a lot deeper. I don't know the answer to this. Like, for some reason, I'm just a little more skeptical on, like, how the Sixers are going to make it work with just Harden and Embiid, and what's the rest of the team going to look like. So you may have to get rid of Thybul, Maxi. What is this? Get rid of Tobias's contract. So then you're going to take whatever that roster is going to be and go up against the Bucks, go up against the Heat, go up against the Nets, who still have Kevin Durant. Like, I just don't see...
It's the whole Houston Rockets theory. It's two MVP caliber players still in their prime saying, hey, let's give this a go. Whether that was James and Chris Paul, which was sort of mismatched, this seems to be a better fit for, would seem to be a better fit for James.
This is not... This is an uninformed opinion, I'm going to say here. But like, are we overestimating this, like, relationship between James Harden and Daryl Morey? Like, are they best friends? Is this something I don't know? Like, why is it such a huge draw for
It's the
for
devil
Harden?
You know is better than the devil you don't. Like, he put him in a great situation in Houston, built a franchise
Did
around him when people didn't know what he was going to be. And yeah, I mean, the guy won MVPs. If you would have, I would have bet every dollar that I had when he got traded to Houston that that dude would never win an MVP.
Right.
And there he was, like, in pretty close to
okay,
winning
so,
two
but
of
then
them.
That, so that's the
maximize
thing, though. What's more
talent.
Important, being that guy
that's
winning
what
up
he's
MVP
dealing
numbers
with right now.
Or winning
exactly.
a championship?
I mean, and that's that's something that somebody will give you a different answer to, especially retired right. players, right? They'll say, hey, with four championships but not a big role, eh, not really. I'd rather have that big role and just be thought of as one of the greatest players ever.
And I mean, like, I don't think Harden would have come over to Brooklyn, though, if that was his total MO. Like, this looked like a guy that thought he'd latch on to a juggernaut here and just go get the one thing missing from his resume.
What's up, Charlie?
So, obviously the 76ers would have to give up a ton to get James Harden, probably more than Ben Simmons. But let's just say, in theory, you just had Tyrese Maxey, Seth Curry, James Harden, Israel Gutierrez playing power forward, and Joel Embiid on the court. That team's going to be close to winning a championship. Am I crazy for thinking that? Like, that team is so loaded offensively.
I'm a pretty good stretch four. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think Joel Embiid will take a would love that, right? Like, even after first of all, I think he learned from last year is, like, if you're going to win MVP, like, start later. You know, start really turning it on later in the season instead of the beginning.
Now, he had, he had a hard COVID battle, by the way.
Right. But I'm saying just in terms of, like, I just say means he learned it from last year. Because last year he was, oh, MVP, MVP. Oh, I lose 10 games with an injury and now I'm done. Yeah. And so this year it's like you really got to build up the momentum later in the year. But, yeah, I just think that, again, if you still believe that James Harden can be the 30-some points a game James Harden or triple-double James Harden on a nightly basis, then that duo should be overwhelming. And you just build around them, frankly, probably just build around them a defense and rebounding team with a shooter or two on there, and there you go. Because it's an entirely different player than he will have ever played with in James Harden. He's got the lob ability, sure, but gives him a break as well. So when he wants it, he can give it to the guy in the post. If not, it's on me, as opposed to, you know, I've got to decide whether it's me or Kyrie Irving or KD handling the ball.
By the way, this report that Harden doesn't like living in New York because of the taxes, I feel you, dog.
I don't even think it's just the taxes. I think it's, you know, big fish in a bigger pond. Like, I think he likes to be the attraction in a city, and Houston is a great city.
I do enjoy that. I'm in the middle of Miron Faber's book about Giannis right now, and one of my favorite parts was Giannis as a rookie asking the veterans how he can get them to stop taking taxes out of his game checks. I was like, man, if that ain't the most, like, I don't care if you're coming over here for the first time or you've been here your whole life, we are all trying to figure that out, man.
How do we do it? How do we do it? I don't know.
Oh, see it through, my boy.
By the way, do you think that the Sixers, Cassidy, if they made a move for a non-James Harden, for one that I've been calling for earlier, just like a step below a star player or two, do you think that they would sort of vault themselves in contention in the Eastern Conference?
I need to see what do they give up? Yes.
I think
Joel
I think
Embiid, I'll say this. Joel Embiid can be the most dominant player in the league. Like, on any given night. And we are watching the NBA right now where the skill level is just insane. Like, I know a lot, like, the NFL is taking a lot of attention, you know, early on here. But if you're watching the NBA in a night-to-night basis, the numbers are insane that these guys are putting up. Like, historical numbers. Like I already said, what Jokic is doing, what Embiid is doing. Like, so I just feel like, to answer your question, yes. With Joel Embiid, him being one of the most dominant players, yes. The answer, short answer, is yes.
I'm only going to add this just to tick off Charlie, but you're so right in terms of the level of talent in the league just being as deep and crazy as it's ever been. Caleb Martin is on a two-way deal for the Miami Heat this year, and now he's a regular in the rotation, and if you sort of squint sometimes, he looks like Tracy McGrady out there. Like, you could never find that level of talent, 15 years ago in the league. The development is so, so deep in the league. All right. You're good, Charlie.
Don't make me start talking about, you know, IO.
I just gave a specific example of deep of talent in the league. I'm not saying specifically it was a Heat culture thing. Come on. Did I mention flag football? You're going to have to review the tape.
I have a follow-up question here. And to your point, I'm going to mention Heat culture. Of course, you know, imagine the 76ers. If they had kept Jimmy Butler. I mean, all of this would have been assuaged long ago. But my question is Morey making a mistake by only wanting a blue chipper back? When you have this top-end talent in Embiid, could you not build around him with more sort of star-level role players, players that they gave up in the past?
That's been my take the entire time, and it's not even just because of what they need necessarily, of what's the better fit in terms of basketball. It's a better fit in terms of mentality. It's like Joel Embiid has gone through that little sort of tug of war with Ben Simmons, whose team is it, blah, blah, blah. It's clearly Joel Embiid's team. And to bring in a James Harden, like, he might not dig the way that guy plays basketball. He might like the results, but he might not love the way he plays basketball. And if you bring in guys with a different mentality that know, hey, I can do some things. I can give you 30 every night, but it's not on me, so I can be more of a complimentary player. Like, I think there's something to be said about surrounding him with that because he is that level of player. You know, like a Nikola Jokic, for example. Yes, he's got a Jamal Murray, but, you know, do we think of Jamal Murray and James Harden in the same category? Probably not yet, right? So, yeah, I'm of the opinion that that is certainly the case. And for lack of a better term, wasting an entire season just to figure, you know, wait for that other superstar is just another negative on top of that. So I think they should have or should.
I mean, still. I miss Jamal Murray. That's another thing, just to be a fangirl of the league. Like, there's so many guys who are injured, too, that are so talented that we're not even seeing this year so far.
Yeah. We had this conversation relative to, like, because I think, like, in the AFC alone right now, there's, like, 10 quarterbacks under 26, and we're talking about the health of the league. But, like, the NBA's postseason bubble a couple of years ago had that sort of emergence, right, where everyone saw the star turn for Jamal Murray and DeAndre Ayton was last year. But, like, Donovan Mitchell, all these guys, like, mm-hmm. It's in an incredible place. But, like, even looking at the teams that made far runs last year, and again, I know we could talk about last year being different in some number of ways, but, like, with Giannis and the Bucks, like, it's not like, listen, like, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, they're great players, but they're not on the caliber or level of Giannis. It wasn't like you tied three megastars together. And you could say the same to an extent with the Suns. Like, Chris Paul is a phenomenal player, but he certainly was injured last year going into the postseason alongside Devin Booker, who's the legitimate number one.
If you were to say, like, okay, Chris Middleton without the title, all right, would Daryl Morey trade Ben Simmons for that guy? And based on what he's telling us, no, that would, because, like, we didn't think of Chris Middleton as this top tier guy like 2-3 years ago. He was a nice complimentary piece. And yet, if you can imagine him with Joel Embiid and some of those other parts, yeah, that to me would be championship caliber. So that probably, you know, is Joel Embiid as freakish as Giannis? Yeah, I mean, the dude scored 50 points in like 30-some minutes, less than that, right? 20-some minutes the other night,
27 minutes.
And so he can absolutely be that guy. So I think the Bucks are probably the closest comp to a team that you can build a championship around, that literal centerpiece.
Yeah, I mean, I think last year's finals was, you know, kind of a departure from this, like, even though Giannis is one of the great biggest stars in the world, but, like, this departure from this being a superstar driven league. I think the Suns and Bucks were
an
example of a great chemistry. You know, when you have a guy like Giannis and you anchor him with two consistent veterans, you know, who aren't really scared of the moment, that, you know, like, it works. And then with the Suns, like, their chemistry was a three-headed monster that also went into the coaching. Like, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, and Monty Williams, like, that was their big three, which I think led them to the finals. So I don't know what point I'm trying to make other than, again, fangirl of the NBA, watch NBA games, specifically on Wednesday, Friday, Saturday night, and soon to be Sunday on ABC.
All right, do you know what time it is? I think it's game time.
Woo! That's right. And that game is Whodunit. We'll give you a quote. You guys come together in a minute and tell us who done it. First quote. It was the worst experience I've had in my professional lifetime. I went through that whole depression thing too, where I'd stare at the ceiling and think, are we doing everything possible? Because I really believed we had the roster that was good enough to win games. I just don't think we did a great job. And your choices are Urban Meyer, Brian Flores, Joe Judge, or Matt Nagy.
Wow. I'm pretty sure I would have heard this if it was Brian Flores right now, because if Brian Flores fired back with, "It was the worst experience I've had in my professional lifetime," there would be some birds chirping down here in South Florida. So I'm going to rule him out. I feel like it's either A or C.
Yeah.
Right? Matt Nagy wouldn't say that.
No,
he looked like he was having a good time.
No, he would not. He would not admit to that.
So who's the excuse machine over here? Is it my favorite Urban Meyer, or is it Joe Judge, who really didn't really cue up the excuse machine too often, right? He was just Mr. Cliche, not the excuse machine. I'm going to go with Urban Meyer. I'm going to go with Urban.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I am almost 99% sure that this level of complaining and drama comes from only one person, so I'll go A.
There we go. I mean,
wow.
Look, Urban, he just kept shooting himself in the foot, like, from the jump. He is that, he's that guy, you know, you go on, it's like the bad date guy, you know? You start off the whole date, walk into the restaurant, and he tells you, "Oh, what's wrong? You look tired." First of all, never tell a woman they look tired. It's the worst thing you could ever do. Then they start talking about themselves, doesn't ask one question about you. Then they make you pay for the drinks, and just gets to the point, you know, where the Jags had to get up and say they need to go to the bathroom, and then just dipped halfway through the date. Like, these were all self-inflicted wounds by Urban Meyer. From, like, not flying home with the team, from all of the little drama with the coaches and the players, to basically it started from picking up Tim Tebow. Like, from the jump, every problem he had was self-inflicted. And, you know, he could be reflective on it and feel like nothing he did was right, because he's right. Nothing he did was right.
Can we dissect that quote once again, if we could put that thing back up? Because there's a couple parts on here that bother me. Is one, where he said, "I went through that whole depression thing too, where I'd stare at the ceilings and think, are we doing everything possible?" I think he's throwing around depression out there just to get a little bit of sympathy there, because if you're upset that you are maybe not maximizing your talent or doing everything possible to get wins, I don't know if that's depression. You know what I mean? Like, staring at the ceilings type of stuff. Like, you're just trying to figure out your job, all right? Not to really get into his head. Who knows what's been in there. But, and this is the part where it makes me think he was crazy. I really believed we had a roster that was good enough to win games. Like, then you're just setting yourself up. Like, go ahead and be realistic like the rest of the world and say, all right, you got a quarterback you want to develop. That's pretty much it. If you go 2-whatever, as long as that quarterback looked good, then you'll be good. And so a lot of that just doesn't make sense. It sounds like a guy just, you know, cranking up excuses, I suppose.
Yeah, boy, there's a lot of things about the entirety of this podcast that I really would like to say, but I'm not going to, for the sake of a number of things on here, and I'll just move away from some other parts of that. But with Urban Meyer, the thing that has gotten so tired, and I'll never forget this, one of my buddies had the chance to play with Philip Rivers out with the Chargers, and one of the most endearing things I ever heard about Philip Rivers was the way that he would address the team after a loss, where he'd bring everyone together, and he would say, "Hey, you don't got to show me how mad you are about this. We all care about winning. We all care about doing this at a high level. You don't got to sit here and cry and moan and show me how mad you are about this. We're going to show up next week, and we're going to get back to work." Because that guy was a professional who understood it. Like, and Urban Meyer, who has done high-level winning for a long time, it just felt like so much of this had to be a show of how ready he was for all of this. Like,
yes.
I always liken it in the NBA to what we went through with David Black coming over, to where it was, "Hey, I expect a certain level of respect based on what I've done in a league that ain't this one." Mm. And everyone constantly pushed back and said, "Hey, listen, it's different here. Like, you're coming over here, and while we certainly respect what you've accomplished, you got to show up and sort of earn it here, because this is pro sports. This isn't college where everyone's just got to line up and do it your way right off the jump." And the tone and tenor of everything, Urban Meyer wants to push back on the Josh Lambeau. So, sure, I don't need specifics. We've got enough anecdotally from all of this to say, this was a dude that felt like he was owed a certain level of respect that didn't require him to come and earn it every day. And anyone who's been a part of the team, you guys have been a part of teams here in sports and life, like, you go in and you earn that trust on the day-to-day basis. And this, everything we've gotten out of this just seemed like a guy who wanted everyone to buy into his way without having to go and earn it in those ways. And then on the back end wanted to tell us how hard life was because he had to lose for a little bit.
Felt he earned that respect before Utah even. Because I know by the time he got to Florida, he was carrying himself that same way. You know, hey, I've earned this respect. Everybody follow me. So, I mean, it's just the personality type there. It also screams of a guy who is hoping he's not done. Like, if he's just trashing the position and the organization and the players and everything else, then he's just setting himself up again to create excuses where other people, probably in college, will be like, yeah, I think we can give this guy a go. Probably not, you know, top of the sport, but
listen, Liberty's going to need a new head coach in a couple of years. So,
you know what, XFL, don't even do it. Don't do it. No one do it. Okay, just
if he were to go full heel. And then, you know, go show up in some other league as the heel head coach who does and says whatever he wants. That would be the interesting turn.
We know how this life cycle works. Like, it's like how we can track the evolution of a caterpillar to a butterfly. Urban Meyer's going to go back to Fox and probably do that, you know, Big Noon kickoff show that they do for a year. And then he's going to sit around, and then there's going to be some college job that likely opens up and wants to go out here and just kind of do the Russell Westbrook at the end of the bench eating the hot dog and bring Urban Meyer over here. Because at that level, like, I have confidence he can go back and do winning. Like, in 2020.
Butterflies have, like, short lifespans. I think Urban Meyer's life has lasted way too long at this point.
But as we've gone along here, it's been shorter and shorter tenures at all these spots here. So we can speed this process up a little bit.
I was just thinking
all right, what's the next quote? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, never mind. It's done. What's the next quote?
Oh, no. Next quote.
You're cut off.
Next quote. We hope that after the All-Star break or early March, Kawhi and PG will come back. And your choices are Steve Ballmer, Nick Batum, Ty Lue, or Adam Silver.
Who needs them most? Is it Adam Silver? Is it Ty? Is it Ballmer? I'm going to go with Steve Ballmer. I'm going to go with the guy who owns a team and assume that, yeah, he is probably the guy who needs them the most, because this experiment bringing Kawhi and teaming him with Paul was supposed to be, hey, we're the best team in the league, not, hey, we can make the playoffs and maybe make some noise. He's got to be putting pressure on all this to happen.
I think I agree with Ballmer too, but because Ty Lue wouldn't say that. Like, he knows not to set himself up like that. And yep, Adam Silver wouldn't have any business saying that.
I do like the notion of Adam Silver being the one to mysteriously burst through the door with this. We need this. Yes,
we need this.
That's the no Adam votes Silver Nicholas laser eyes meme.
No votes for Nicholas Batum.
Would it be interesting if Nicholas Batum said, hey! David Mars y revienne.
Wow. Didn't even say it in English. That's how none of us know what he said.
Wow.
That's what you got to do these days. I think you just got to listen to every podcast that has anything to do with your team if you're looking for news to break, because somebody's going to let it spill when they're super comfortable on a podcast where they wouldn't, normally if they're in a professional setting.
Because
I'm pretty sure Nicholas Batum's not allowed to say that.
Someone asked me earlier in the day, though, like, is there too much content now? And they were talking about, like, shows to watch. But this is another example. Like, thank God we have people out here mining every podcast and some weird intern that's in charge of just looking at people's likes on social media. Because I wouldn't know where to find half this stuff. Like, thank you, valuable Gen X kid or Gen Z kids who are employed by these companies.
Whatever it is. Thank you.
I saw JJ Redick tweet out that he did a podcast with Draymond Green. It might be the best one he's done so far. And I'm really thinking about listening to it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to it, but I'm thinking about listening to it because it's just so much other stuff.
No, we'll listen to it. No, but speaking of podcasts, I listen to The Hoop Collective with Brian Windhorst. I think it's one of our best podcasts. And he actually broke some news talking about Paul George, where he basically said that he could possibly get surgery. And if that's the case, or you have it? That he'd be done for the year. So, Brian is saying that he's waiting for that bad news with Paul George, which would change this whole quote from, who is it again? Batum, completely. So, I think it's to talk about whether or not they're going to be back. I mean, they have to be back if the Clippers want any chance. At least one of them has to be back.
Well, to my initial point, though, like, Cassidy, what do you where did this fall apart? Not where did this fall apart, but did it just fall apart that quickly? Like, the Clippers, during one magical NBA offseason, were all of a sudden the best team in the league. Like, dominant, yeah. Two great two-way players. Nobody's going to score on them. And we haven't even seen a finals run from them yet. And this year, seeming like it's going to just fall off, even if they do come back in March, do we think that this team is going to be able to turn it on and compete? I don't think so. So is it ever going to come back for the Clippers, or is this just like the latest Urban Meyer career stop where it's just, it's a little clip. They went a little clip and then that was it. Then it's just over after 2 years.
I mean, it's so hard when you have your two best players not there. Like, there's only so much Reggie Jackson and Terrence Mann can do, you know? it can't have a conversation about this team right now. They're not complete. When they are complete, you know, they battled against the Suns in the Western Conference Finals, and Paul George, you know, silenced the haters, and he carried it over to the beginning of this season. And if Kawhi was really going to come back, you know, towards the end of the year, like, yeah, they definitely are a team that you have to consider to be a threat, because I also trust Ty Lue. I think he's a great coach, and he can, and the supporting cast around Paul George and Kawhi, they have abilities to shoot this team into a game. And so it's hard to have a conversation about the Clippers when basically their whole team, which is Kawhi and PG, are out.
It is tough,
especially
though,
when Kawhi coming back from an injury. We've seen it before, and it doesn't always look very smooth. It takes a while.
Well, and like, Izzy, that was kind of what I was thinking about with this, because this was the conversation happening around, like, when I was reading up on, you know, getting ready for AD's return against the Nets coming up potentially tonight and all this. Like, when you build teams relying on players who have never been able to really stay fully healthy, and for Anthony Davis, that's been a career issue. For Kawhi Leonard, it's been the, you know, since his departure from the Spurs, this constant battle of making sure you do everything to take care of this guy's body, because we've been dealing with, you know, mysterious ailments and all of these things that have popped up. Like, when you build your house on a foundation that you walked into and knew was cracked, you can't be surprised when all of a sudden the rest of it's not looking the way you want to consistently. So for the Clippers, like, this unfortunately fits into the brand really well of them getting back to Clippers back, like, at a time where you finally have LA really up for grabs and the Lakers look a little bit human and all of this. It seems only right that the Clippers would be in no position to actually go and capitalize and make up ground on that.
It'd be pretty unfortunate for Paul George that silencing the haters is basically like one or two playoff series and a half a regular season. Like, it wasn't really where he took a team and carried them on his shoulders into a finals. It's just, hey, this is what I have, and you guys are going to have to deal with it. No, not really, because if it comes where they're, you know, making a second round, third round playoff run, all eyes are going to be on Paul George, and it's going to be, hey, can you do it this time, or is it going to be the same old playoff piece? So he doesn't really have enough of a resume there to say he has silenced all the haters. Am I right?
I think when you watch him play and he's healthy, that's a big problem. Like, he's had some real serious injuries. But when he's healthy, he puts up MVP type numbers. So I just, you know, I think the mental battle, what people said that he folds and he goes like 0-for in the playoffs. I think that was a real thing that he overcame last year. When he, you know, like, was carrying that team. So as far as, like, actual resume and, like, significant wins, no. But, like, if we're basing it on individual performance, and if this guy is, like, really good, Paul George is really good.
And I think people continue to underestimate. If you're basing it on nuance, I don't think the haters really understand.
Well, I say, yes. This is all predicated because a guy gave himself a nickname. Like, that's what he's got to overcome. Had that not happened, we would have been like, oh, yeah, of course he overcame this last postseason.
Well, there was also that Gatorade Real Smooth commercial where it happened during a playoff run where things were not going so smoothly for him. And so those two in connection, I think, would probably created that picture for you. But enough of beating up on Paul George. He did silence them for a little bit. So, do we have any more games?
Yeah, we have another game, if then. And, you know, to be fair to Paul George, they might have won the title last year if Kawhi didn't get hurt. But if then, it's a game where... Conditional statement, you guys fill it out.
What did... Are you okay? Did you just, like, fall down?
Was there an accident over there in the fourth box?
Can you guys
everything,
hear me? I think my
we can now.
Yeah, I was not worried about you, bud.
Hey, you bounce back. You bounce back.
All right.
If we see blood dripping onto the cards, should we be concerned?
Right. The small hand is now severed and bleeding.
So, first one.
What is that?
It lost
its hand. Is that an octopus?
By the way, that made me...
still stink when AD returns tonight, then blank.
Whew. Then just be really aware of LeBron's Instagram account, just because I feel like people are starting to read into the tea leaves of everything that he says. I know he had the one post after leaving Miami, in a loss, by the way, where he said 305 to my city with sort of a couple of pictures of the banner and everything else. And, you know, I don't think that he is giving out signals that say, hey, I want to leave Los Angeles. I just think he's given out signals that say, I'm not very happy here right now. This isn't, this team is not grabbing my attention. You could see him on the court. Like, he's just a little bit dismissive sometimes or distanced. And so, yeah, I don't know if he is in, I've had some conversations recently about people who are just admitting that he has way too much power over personnel decisions. But I wonder if he's just going to be hands off on this one and just be like, hey, look, I've done my part. Like, I'm scoring like crazy. I'm scoring 30 points a game, and like, it's easy for me at this age. So you guys fix this, because I'm, you know, I can't do it. I can't do everything. And so it's a little bit of, you know, taking, it's a little bit of LeBron playing both sides, because he would love to be the guy that fixes it, but it feels like he's just kind of, you know, hands off. And if AD doesn't come in and all of a sudden elevate this team to looking like a, you know, top four team in the West, I don't know, man. He could check out, or maybe even ask. I don't think he'd ask for a trade. I don't think he'd ever be okay with that. But I think he could sort of check out and just have sort of an individual season instead of a team season.
Did you just draw marker on your hand, Charlie?
Yeah,
like,
we got to have a conversation.
What did is that a glove?
That's a bloody glove. It's a Dexter glove. Is that?
Did you just have that lying around?
If it doesn't fit, you must have quit. What is going on?
Do you have a bunch of plastic wrap around that you can sort of cover the office in?
Like, I know we have like glitter and like weird little hands and stuff like that, but like, again, why did you have a bloody hand?
Do you have a French?
Is that French manicure?
Pretty sure that was.
Yeah, do you have a French manicure? I need to go get a French manicure after
that
this.
That wasn't
by the
his
way.
Hand. That's his hand.
That's his hand.
That's a little guy.
Cassidy, real quick, to get you back on track, I remember, I think one of the first games I did this year was Lakers at Bucks, okay?
Yep.
And Anthony Davis was not having any part of defense in that game. Giannis was eating him alive. And I was wondering why anybody would ever consider him for Defensive Player of the Year. And I think that's just kind of what's gotten into him. Like, AD's got to be one of those guys that you have to rev up and make sure he knows he's playing at a high level every night. Because even when he was healthy this year, didn't look great.
No, you're right. But at the same time, Anthony Davis is what makes this team. I mean, he's by no means the cure-all, but he is what is going to make this team win a title if he plays with whatever. Maybe send him back to the bubble. I don't know where his focus and, you know, him and LeBron can start up their budding relationship and build on that bond. I don't know if, like, LeBron having other friends on the team is, like, taking off some of his, like, I don't know, motivation that he would – spew into AD's ear. I don't know, but you're right. He needs to come more correct on this return. Like, if he doesn't play well tonight, who cares? Like, let's get into the All-Star break. That's a different story. And I know, obviously, the trade deadline's before that. You said something like LeBron James has too much control over personnel. Like, what is this? What is this, 2010? We're just observing this? Like, it's LeBron James. Like, of course he has, like, this is what your team is it's LeBron James's window to win another title. So you do whatever is necessary. And LeBron James will tell you what's necessary. Like you need to, you know, you need his input on that, because that's the identity, for better or worse, That's your identity. It's LeBron James championship window, and it's Anthony Davis who makes them a championship contender. So whatever you do, you need to make those two right.
Gojo, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Because to me, I think this is what it comes down to in terms of Anthony Davis. Is he satisfied with a championship, a career that said, you know, hey, I was really good even when I was by myself, a top 75 player, to where even if it just sort of rides out and thins out and no more championships, that he's okay? Or do you think he's the guy that is hearing all the nonsense about, hey, shouldn't have been on the 75 team, shouldn't even be a Hall of Famer if he retires right now, all this hatred just spewing his way because, of course, you know, the not being able to stay healthy stuff. Is he the, hey, I've got to prove myself all over again, that's all the motivation I need? Or is he more of, hey, I've already done it, I've proven it, I live in LA, I'm a champion, I'm teammates with LeBron, nothing else I need to do, I'm just going to sort of live my life. Which one do you think he is?
I mean, AD has never really struck me as the former, right? Like,
right.
I don't know what we've seen outwards as evidence. And it's not to say that he's not a tremendously hard worker. Like, you don't get to the point of being a player. Like, he deserves all those accolades. But I think we also look at Anthony Davis. Like, the conversations we had about him going into the bubble was he was supposed to be what the bridge program worked towards. LeBron being able to take a back seat to a guy whose greatness really came into full form and turned into the future of the franchise. That is something that I think we wrongly assume is for everybody. Like, we're kind of dealing with that right now with Golden State. And why am I blanking on Buddy's name right now out in Golden State, like their fourth
in
best?
In Golden State?
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green.
Like, this is kind of what we're reckoning with Andrew Wiggins, right? There was that great profile on him about how he wasn't wired to be a guy that was going out there and going to be your face of the franchise, number one dude. And for Anthony Davis, who's lived that life on the lower end and then has now lived in a LeBron, like, which we know, playing with LeBron James is its own unique set of challenges for everyone, even the best players in that orbit. Maybe he's just kind of not the guy that's wired to go out and say, I am going to be the alpha for this organization going forward here. I can be a great player for you. I'm supremely talented. But like looking at what Joel Embiid's done this season, Joel Embiid is if Anthony Davis had the attitude that we all wanted him to have. Like, players of probably equal, yeah, you could argue maybe for AD, greater talent level. But Joel has got the edge that allows him to go out there and do that. Like, yeah, it's the dog, it's whatever you want. But he is, if Anthony Davis had
Can
the
I say
attitude.
Something crazy? Is Anthony Davis too talented where he has no one go-to strength, right? Like, yes, he can play in the low post. Yes, he can play in the mid post. Yes, he can play on the perimeter. But if you look at an offense and think about an offense with him, do you think of one in particular where he normally gets the ball? I'd say probably like high to low post, but I don't know how often he gets that in this offense, especially now with Russell Westbrook requiring, you know, paint touches or at least drives to the paint so it's not clogged up. Like, I think if you're going to, and to your point, Gojo, I think you have to make Anthony Davis the number one guy, the alpha in your lineup.
But that's the problem.
If you make the offense around him and say, LeBron, just get yours off of him, then, yeah, he'll probably put up those numbers and you might have the best version of the offense potentially. But, I mean, with LeBron James on that team, I don't know if you can do that.
Well, it all started, what a microcosm of, I think, their issue with Anthony Davis right now is when they, you know, acquiesced and didn't make him play the five. Like, he can't choose to do, like, what position is best for the team because he doesn't want to get banged up down low. Like, I think it's just, I think that is an example as to what they're dealing with Anthony Davis. If everyone knows that him playing the five is best for the team, but he doesn't want to play it.
Oh, he's going to have to. I don't think that's much of a question at this point. He's going to have to. But I'm going to finish, play the game, and I'm going to finish the sentence that the Lakers still stink when AD returns tonight. Then I'm sure they're going to be great on Friday against the Charlotte Hornets, and all will be fine. Why? Because I'm doing that game, and I don't want anybody saying, I don't want to talk to that guy because he trashed us on that show that's not a real TV show. Okay, so I think they'll be fine by Friday. How's that?
Then on Monday, you can bring a quote from that game and apply it to Aaron Rodgers, and then you're really working here.
Probably on Tuesday, because Monday's more for football people. Tuesday, I'm coming in with a used quote.
I gotta up my game when I'm on here with the actual reporters now and all of this. I realize you guys play like normally I'm in the sandbox with Dominique and Pablo on Monday and we just throw dirt at each other and make poop jokes, but this is the thinking man's debatable on
I'm
this
being
one.
Told I'm being told it's just you just put that in front of everything and then it sounds like you're reporting something.
Man,
your mom could tell you
wow. I do like that one. By the way, Cassidy, did you text before the issue that you had with one of my Bachelor or Bachelorette tweets from last night? Did that have something to do with my mom's criticism of J-Lo's movies all being the same?
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that tweet.
Yeah.
I just was like, I don't want to offend like probably 60% of the population, but I have so many smart friends, you included, that watch The Bachelor, and I just don't understand it. But that's a conversation for another day. But your mom saying that J-Lo's movies are all the same, I mean, she's not wrong, but like, was she hating and saying it, or?
I think it was just sort of an observation. Like, I don't think there was any hate there. Like,
I mean, they're all the same, which means in your response, they're all great.
Yes.
And enjoyable.
Maid of Honor. Maid of Honor, was that one of them? That was my favorite, I think.
They're like the Harry Potter of rom-coms.
Boom.
Consistently good.
Oh, no. What's the one where she's with the guy from Grey's Anatomy where he goes, we do the bonding. What's that one? There's like an Italian man involved.
Oh, yeah, The Wedding Planner.
That's
like,
yeah. The Wedding
top
Planner.
Five.
There you go. That's by far. By far the best
J-Lo
movie.
Made in Manhattan.
Matthew McConaughey's in that one, right?
And now we get to add to it with her and Owen Wilson falling in love of some rom-com whose name escapes me.
Right, and she's playing basically herself. I think it's Marry Me. Don't.
Yes.
I ran into them as they were filming that movie. At some hotel that we were having an MBA meetings. This was pre-pandemic. I get off the elevator, turn the corner, and it's J-Lo. And this was in the height of my, like, obsession with J-Lo. And I just, can you imagine just running smack into J-Lo and Owen Wilson and the guy from Game of Thrones, Sam Tully.
Yeah!
He's also in this movie. And I didn't know what was happening. And I'm just walking through the cameras, and I like got all nervous, and Jeff Van Gundy was there, and I was like talking to Jeff, and I'm like, I want to go talk to her. He goes,
amazing.
Okay. And he looks at me. Like, go talk to her.
You should have just said, hey, Jennifer, I'm your stunt double for the day. I'm just going to be following you everywhere. Boom. Never
just
leave her side.
Give me your moisturizer. That's all I need.
Drop the skincare routine.
I thought you were going to say something entirely different.
By the way, shout out to Sam Tully. What range? He's going to be in Marry Me, and he's also
what
in Moonfall
range?
Coming out right
what
now.
What range, Samuel Tully? Way to go, buddy.
I'm unfamiliar with his work. We have a bonus topic.
We have a tweet from our friend, Long Live the Queen, who follows the show and said, the Sixers should trade Simmons and a few picks for Caleb Martin.
That's the trade. I'm telling you, if you squint your eyes when he's in the fast break, it is Tracy McGrady. Come back. I was going to say come back to life, but come back to the NBA.
Did you just kill Tracy McGrady?
Like Tracy McGrady right now? Like today is Tracy McGrady.
Oh, man. I mean, possibly, yes. But either way, it still reminds me a little bit of T-Mac.
Give a little bit of heat culture to that.
Are we just our bonus subjects are just people laying down facts? Like, is that all we're doing here? Because nobody's really making fun of me on that one.
I mean, listen, if you gave me Caleb Martin, like Caleb Martin is to me like what Zach Taylor was in the NFL. If you laid down a picture of him right now, wouldn't be able to pick him out of a lineup. No idea who that human
probably because he's got a twin brother named Cody Martin who plays for the Hornets, and so you'd have a hard time picking between them for sure.
I mean, I could have gone on and on about, I want to call him, hey, yo, Dasumu, all show, but I didn't do that. I know it's Ayo, but he should be, hey, yo,
hey, yo. We're going with Ayo.
Played a stellar game last night against the OKC Thunder.
It is a good one.
I got it in.
I'm tired of using technology.
What else did Dirk say?
You know, he talked about how his wife used to make all those, like, meals for him. Those look fire.
And what'd she say? Take that with you
tin foil.
To work.